What did the islanders eat, and how many of them were there? At the time of European arrival, they subsisted mainly as farmers, growing sweet potatoes, yams, taro, bananas, and sugarcane, plus chickens as their sole domestic animal. Fish and shellfish made a smaller contribution to the diet than on most other Polynesian islands. The result was a high-carbohydrate diet, exacerbated by the islanders compensating for Easter's limited sources of fresh water by drinking sugarcane juice. No dentist would be surprised to learn that the islanders ended up with the highest incidence of tooth decay of any known prehistoric people. Easter's population at its peak has been estimated by methods such as counting the number of house foundations, or by estimating the numbers of chiefs and their followers from the numbers of platforms or erected statues. The resulting estimates range from a low of 6,000 to a high of 30,000 people, which works out to an average of 90 to 450 people per square mile. My own opinion is that the higher estimates are more likely to be correct, in part because those estimates are by the archaeologists with the most extensive recent experience of surveying Easter. In addition, the earliest reliable estimate of Easter's population, 2,000 people, was made by missionaries who took up residence in 1864, just after an epidemic of smallpox had killed off most of the population. And that was after the kidnapping of about 1,500 islanders by Peruvian slave ships in 1862-63, after two previous documented smallpox epidemics dating back to 1836, after the virtual certainty of other undocumented epidemics introduced by regular European visitors from 1770 onwards, and after a steep population crash that began in the 1600s. The same ship that brought the third smallpox epidemic to Easter went on to the Marquesas, where the resulting epidemic killed 7/8 of the population. For these reasons, it seems to me impossible that the 1864 post-smallpox population of 2,000 people represented the residue of only 6,000 to 8,000 people. Having seen the evidence for intensive prehistoric agriculture on Easter, I find estimates of 15,000 or more people unsurprising. That evidence for agricultural intensification is of several types. One type consists of stone-lined pits 5 to 8 feet in diameter and up to 4 feet deep that were used as composting pits in which to grow crops, and possibly also as vegetable fermentation pits. Another type of evidence is a pair of stone dams built across the bed of the intermittent stream draining the southeastern slope of Mount Tarawaca in order to divert water onto broad stone platforms. That water diversion system resembles systems for irrigated taro production elsewhere in Polynesia. Still further evidence for agricultural intensification is numerous stone chicken houses, mostly up to 20 feet long, 10 feet wide, and 6 feet high, with a small entrance near the ground for chickens to run in and out, and with an adjacent yard ringed by a stone wall to prevent the precious chickens from running away or being stolen. But the most widespread method adopted to increase agricultural output involved various uses of lava rocks. Large boulders were stacked as windbreaks to protect plants from being dried out by Easter's frequent strong winds. Smaller boulders were piled to create protected above-ground or sunken gardens for growing bananas and also for starting seedlings to be transplanted after they had grown larger. Extensive areas of ground were partly covered by rocks placed at close intervals on the surface, such that plants could come up between the rocks. Other large areas were modified by so-called lithic mulches, which means partly filling the soil with rocks down to a depth of a foot, either by carrying rocks from nearby outcrops or else by digging down to and breaking up bedrock. Depressions for planting taro were excavated into natural gravel fields. All of these rock windbreaks and gardens involved a huge effort to construct, because they required moving millions or even billions of rocks. Why did farmers go to all that effort? The answer has to do with Easter's windy, dry, cool climate. Rocks make the soil moister by covering it, reducing evaporative water loss due to sun and wind, and replacing a hard surface crust of soil that would otherwise promote rain runoff. Rocks absorb solar heat during the day and release it at night. They protect soil against being eroded by splashing rain droplets. Dark rocks on lighter soil warm up the soil by absorbing more solar heat, and rocks may also serve as slow, time-release fertilizer pills by containing needed minerals that gradually become leached out into the soil. Those are enormous advantages.